Welcome to You, Me, and the Dogs, the podcast where we explore the wonderful world of pet ownership. Join me every Wednesday as my guests and I share personal stories, insights, and experiences, of course, with dogs. Today I'm chatting with Karen Thomas, who is a nurse, caretaker, philanthropist, founder of Peyton's Promise Sanctuary here in the Florida Keys.
Yes.
How are you?
Hi, I'm great. Welcome. Thank you so much for coming down to visit us.
Yes, it's so peaceful here. How did you go about starting Peyton's Promise Sanctuary?
Okay, well, I have to say that I started volunteering with shelter dogs specifically when I was 7 years old. And at the age of seven, I knew that that is what I wanted to do when I grew up. Like I said, I want to have, you know, all of these dogs, and I just want to take care. I was a natural caregiver at the age of seven. I was the last of five children, and I was always cleaning up after everybody. And so it was kind of like my role. And as I got older, of course, you know, adults in our lives kind of like to extinguish dreams and
like a flow of life and just
right. Oh, you know, you should do this, right? Or maybe you should do that. So as a natural caregiver, and I was strong in the sciences, I thought, okay, well then how about if I become a nurse, because I'm really good at taking care of everybody else. So that's what I did. I got my bachelor's of science in nursing back in 1992. And I spent about 20 or 25 years working in a hospital setting, fast paced, high stress. And I wasn't super happy. I was good at what I did, but I knew it wasn't my passion.
Right.
And at the end of the day, I couldn't wait for those days that I would go visit the local Humane Society or the SPCA. I've been here for 22 years, and I actually started volunteering at our local SPCA probably a week after I came down here while working at our local hospital. And then as time went on, I started getting into studying more holistic modalities, incorporating the Western medicine that I was trained in with more healing touch and Eastern medicine. And I was on my healing touch for humans journey when I found I was just at the end of almost ready to get certified. And I found out that this particular school had a healing touch for animals program. And that did it for me. I was like, that was about 10 years ago.
Okay.
I said, that's it.
Did you swear?
That's it. I still have my skills for humans, but I said, that's it. And I jumped tracks to the animals. And once I started really honing in on, you know, body work and energy work and animal communication, I went to Communication with All Life University to fine tune my skills. I've always communicated with animals, and I thought everybody did.
Right.
And I didn't realize that that was your intuition as a muscle, wasn't it? So as I was going through school, still working as a nurse, I thought I'm working towards my sanctuary becoming a reality.
So you knew at seven?
I knew at seven.
Wow.
So what really kicked me was January of 2020, a very sick, broken, beautiful German Shepherd was surrendered to our sanctuary here. Her name was Peyton Rose. And she had so many, her skin was raw. Like, there were so many things wrong with her. She had diseases and infections, and she was so uncomfortable in her skin. And I worked very hard. Every day I would go and give her, you know, energy treatments, a special bath, using holistic oils and essential oils and massage and all sorts of tapping. And I was really trying to help her on an emotional level as well as a physical level. And I got her to a place where she was getting stabilized. And I was able to, I had the time to spend that one-on-one time with her. The staff is very busy, and the other, you know, it just gets really busy. So COVID hit, and then all of a sudden volunteers weren't allowed in the shelter for a couple months. So a few months went by.
So what happened during that time?
Yeah. So she was there with the staff. There was no volunteers. And she was taken care of, but not given the royal treatment like I was giving. Right. So after 2 months' time, when I was allowed back in, she was pretty much right back to where she was, because she wasn't receiving all of that extra. Not that I'm anyone special, but I was willing to put that time and effort. So
yeah, and it gave her some sort of like like yeah. this boost.
And she looked forward to our visits right. every day. They knew when Karen pulled up, everybody knew because she would start barking. She just smelled me. She smelled me. And she would bark. She was very vocal, as German Shepherds are. So when I went back, she was basically yelling at me, like, where have you been? You know, look at me. Where have you been? I don't feel seen. I don't feel heard. So I resumed my daily bathing and all of my treatments. And I continued to say to her, Peyton, I promise you, when we see you through your journey, I'm going to start the sanctuary. Like, that was the kick yeah. that I needed. Like, she was literally saying to me, you need to start the sanctuary. Right. And I listened. Within a few months, she continued to decline. And we had a lot of work on this dog, acupuncture and traditional Western medicine. And the team got together at the SPCA and decided that really the kindest thing to do would be to euthanize her. Like, she wasn't going to come back from all of her disease processes. So the director lovingly and kindly let me adopt her and take her for a private euthanasia. Okay. So we had a best last day for her. We had a party right here. She got to swim. You know, I had friends come over who had known her and taken care of her. We made her pancakes and special right. food and all the things she loved. And she knew, like, as soon as 4 o'clock rolled around, she went over to my truck and started jumping up and barking at the truck. Like, okay, let's go. She was ready.
Go.
She was ready. Yeah. She was ready. And it was probably one of the, I've been through a lot of euthanasias, but this one was so special. Like, she released so quickly. She knew, she trusted, she just knew. Mm-hmm. She looked at my eyes and said, you know, we're moving on to the next right. chapter. And I mm-hmm. held her paw and I held her and I just told her she was safe, and she released, and I felt her spirit leave her body. And ever since then, then the name came to me, Peyton's Promise, of mm-hmm. course, because that was my promise to her. And I feel like she's been really helping ever since her transition to, like, just pull it together and get it going. And
right.
So it took, COVID slowed things down, of course, with mm-hmm. getting things finalized and moving. And we opened our doors to our first dog in August of 2022, I guess that would be.
Okay.
Yeah.
August, yeah, like when pandemic kind of.
Yes, when everything kind of quieted down. 2021 and 2022, I was really focusing on taking care of my mom, who was very sick, and she was at the end of life. Again, being a nurse,
right.
being used to taking care of hospice patients, that was my natural.
Right.
So this used to be her home, and she knew what the intention was, so she purposely said, after I pass, I want this home to be yours. I want you to make it into the sanctuary you always dreamed of. And I took care of her, and it was funny because things were really at a standstill with the sanctuary, mm-hmm. but now I see why. They were supposed to be, so I could devote my attention to my mom. And when she passed in April of 2022, everything started falling into place, because then I knew she was helping.
Right.
So by August, like I said, by August, we were able to open the doors.
It is a sad passing is, you know, it's a sad thing.
It
and
is.
At the same time, you're trying to celebrate. So it's like,
I'm smiling because, so this is how it went down. Uh-huh. So she passed in April, uh-huh. and we were originally from Pennsylvania. So we had a service down here, and we also scheduled a service. She wanted to be buried up next to my father, and she had a cemetery plot up in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. So we had that scheduled for July, 3 months later. So I'm going to say probably from the time she passed until, you know, May, June, July, we really put work into this. And just staying active with it really helped me move through the grief. Like, mm-hmm. it really helped me give purpose and meaning to her home and to my life's passion. So we flew up to Pennsylvania in July, had her service, and then it felt like the grief started all over again because it was very real, mm-hmm. right? We had family up there. We actually,
the act
of actually burying mm-hmm. your parent. So that it hit home again. And I thought, wow, I came back. I think I flew back on July 30th, mm-hmm. maybe. It was like the very end of the month. And the very next day, it was August 1st, actually, I went up to Miami-Dade and I just saw Bubba's. And I thought, that's it. You are going to be the inaugural dog of Peyton's Promise. Like, it was, he was a red pit mix. He was just incredible and so many things wrong with him. Just cowered in the corner, skin issues, older. His spirit was broken. He just kind of, you know, he had exudate from his eyes and his nose. And I'm like, you're perfect. You're absolutely perfect. He was the first dog to walk through the door. And he really, really, in addition to my two personal dogs, helped me get the healing journey really going.
Right.
Because it was like, okay, this is my purpose. You're an amazing guy. You are the flagship dog. And he went to events. He was loved by everybody in the community on social media. He helped us with fundraisers. And he would be the meeter and the greeter for every dog that came after him. Mm-hmm. And even though he was so sick, when I looked at him, I just knew by his, I could just tell that he had cancer somewhere in his body. It wasn't diagnosed right away. Probably about 6 months in, he wound up with a very large melanoma on his belly that we got removed. And with a couple months after that, it had spread to his lungs. And he wound up living exactly 1 year, 365 days. He wound up living 1 year. So he passed on July 31st of last year. And it was just amazing journey. It was an amazing journey because he lived life. He taught us so many things, like me, my volunteers, my friends, my dogs, my community. We just like to really stay present and enjoy each moment because you don't know.
That I would say that that's probably the number one thing I would say dogs teach you.
Yes.
Is to be present, but then also to rest. Because, you know, they're like, I'm tired.
Yes.
I don't want to do anything for the rest of the day.
Listen to your body. Yes.
Exactly. And it's something that, like, you were talking about intuition, and I feel like a lot of us humans aren't so intuitive. And you're very, I mean, without you knowing at seven, you were intuitive. How did your journey in life, when did it click that you were like, it was my intuition speaking to me?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we all have intuition, and it's just like anything else. It's a muscle that if you don't use it, it can atrophy. So you have to really use it. And I have to say, I was intuitive growing up, but didn't know it. Mm-hmm. So then when I started actually nursing in the hospital, I was so trained. I feel like I kind of shut down my intuition.
Okay.
Maybe it wasn't allowed. Maybe it wasn't.
Or like a block.
It was blocked. My career was so science-based. I didn't even think of using my intuition until I started it was right when I moved down here. So 22 years ago, I got attuned for Reiki. And then as soon as I started learning more about energy healing, I thought, oh, okay. And then it gradually reopened again. Mm-hmm. And then when I started doing the healing touch for animals, I felt like I knew a lot. And even just volunteering in the shelter, I felt like I knew what they were saying to me and I can help them. But only when I was at the shelter. Mm-hmm. So I would shut it off when I was working with humans.
Yeah.
So I think once I really went to animal communication school to fine tune my skills, and we had to do, to get certified, I don't know, I want to say it was over 200 documented sessions from dogs we knew, animals we didn't know, shelter animals, wildlife. Like, I think once I got it all down in writing and I continued to get confirmation from the humans that would say, yeah, that's accurate. I was like, oh, okay, I guess I am connecting with everybody, right?
Yeah, so, and like you're getting confidence.
Right.
At the same time.
Right. So I think when I went through the formal education, that really helped nail it down for me that, okay, animal communication in itself is healing. It's a healing modality just by itself because it allows them to be seen and heard. Mm-hmm. And once they're seen and heard and they get it off their chest, they're like, I feel better now. Somebody's listening to me.
Right.
And that in itself is healing.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, that's oftentimes I'll use that as my first tool. Like I tell people, still, you know, I still have private clients. And when they book sessions with me, I'm like, let's get your animal side of the story first. And then we'll go from there. Like that's the foundational piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You're like a listener. Like the grand loser.
Yeah.
What is the number one question when they consult with you?
Yeah. My dog is extremely anxious. I don't even know what to do anymore. And then you know what the number one answer always is?
Right.
We have to work on the human.
Right.
You have to work on you.
Mm-hmm. Well, dog training, like my
dog
experience
training is human training.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
Remember, you're sharing an energy. So I can't just take the dog out and work on the dog and make the dog better, because as soon as that being goes back into your energy, it's going to go right back. So we always start with the human.
Mm-hmm.
And I go through the whole, it's basically like life coaching and animal communication in the same session, because we have to, hey, what's going on in your life?
Right.
What is your stress level? Yeah. How can we make you better so that you are more grounded and calm for your animal?
Yeah.
Once you are grounded and calm, your animal is going to be more grounded and calm. And we have tools to do that.
Yeah.
There's tools that we can use on both. Emotional freedom technique or tapping on different meridians is really popular and effective. Mm-hmm. And if we can use it for both humans and animals. And yeah, so that's probably the most common complaint. Again, it's because our society is so tightly wound.
Yeah.
And we're not thinking about calming our nervous system down.
Well, that's important.
Yeah.
It's natural and unnatural. You know, like you were saying,
mm-hmm.
naturally we're humans, but it's so we're trained to be unnaturally us.
Yes. Yeah. We're not authentic.
We're
inauthentic.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So getting back to authenticity.
Yeah.
Is what's going to help our dogs. Helping ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
The best way you can help your dog is help yourself.
Right.
How do I do that? I have no idea how to do that. Help me. So that's where we start.
Okay.
Which is why, now I get it later in life, why I had to spend decades working solely with humans.
Mm-hmm.
To understand the human psyche and the human.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Like, how did you as a nurse, and then also learning so much science based, and so, like, I'm sure that you learned medicine.
Yes.
You know, like, that's how you're gonna cure.
Sure.
And getting, like, all of a sudden you were like, that's.
Well, when I was 8 years into my Western medicine, I mean, we were medicine, and it was like side effects.
Yeah.
I'm like, wait a minute. This can't be. There's something that we can do better here. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started getting into the holistic end. So it kind of rolled into combination.
Right.
It's like we use Western medicine when we have to, holistic medicine when we can, every opportunity we can, and it's just finding that balance. And that's kind of how it all snowballed into what I combine now.
Yeah.
You know, it's like I combine everything I learned up to this mm-hmm. point from humans, human medicine, human psyche, dogs, dog medicine, dog psyche, energy medicine, like all of it, put it together, and then just kind of pick and choose and make a little, you know.
Yeah.
Concoction of what works for each person, each dog.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I would say that if there is an issue going on with your dog, whether it's behavior, stress, look at your, just stop and look at yourself just for a minute and just see what's going on in your life. And then a lot of times you'll get the answer.
The first thing I like to see, you know, when I meet a new owner is like, how do they listen to their dog, right? Because like your dog's giving you signs, like body language or like even the way they look at you, they're communicating something. And sometimes dog owners are like oblivious, you know. Mm-hmm. Is there a tip you can give them? Or
education is huge, because we don't speak the same language. And a lot of my private clients, you know, or just even in the shelter, it's you have to give them time. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I recommend that you just sit and breathe. Close your eyes and just sit and breathe. And just just drop in, try to get really quiet and just listen. You don't have to try to connect, just get quiet. And whether you're sitting with your animal next to you or not, you will receive messages. We are so used to being spinning.
Right.
And our thoughts are in the future or they're in the past and they're not in the present. And that's where your animals are, your dogs, cats, they're right in the present moment. So if you can stay present with them and get really, really quiet, you will hear, you will get answers. Mm-hmm. And sometimes it's through, you know, I receive information through different ways. It can be thoughts, feelings, pictures, words. A lot of times I see a movie played out in my head. You know, like, for instance, Yanko could show me him running down the beach and chasing a coconut. Like, that's, and then that's what I would tell. So, but yes, and we are constant, they're constantly giving, and we are constantly receiving, whether we want to listen or not.
Yeah.
Constantly,
like, frequency.
Getting bombarded. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, there's so many things to say about that, but as a new pet parent, I often remind people too that, remember, if you're adopting, my passion is shelters and sanctuaries and rescue organizations. There's the general rule of the 333. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
3 days, 3 days, decompression.
3 weeks.
Yeah, 3 weeks. And then the 3 months, that's like, that's them.
Right. You know? And it's a guideline. It's so general because most of our dogs have now been here for a year-ish or longer. And
even a year.
Months,
yeah, it's not.
I learned something new.
Yeah.
They show me a new personality trait that I can't even, I was like, wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So we're constantly learning each other and reading each other.
And like exposure to different circumstances gives you a different
viewpoint. So my biggest piece, I guess to answer that, my biggest piece of advice is have patience and just slow down.
Right. Yeah. And it's easier said than done, you know, like life, you know, your work. Even social media like that, which in a way, like, social media is good and bad, right?
Yeah.
Like you're getting information, and sometimes the information could be good, could be bad. Try it out. If it works for you, great.
Sure.
It might not work for you. It might work for someone else, you know? And so it's a learning curve.
It's a big learning
curve.
Just like life is a learning curve.
Exactly.
Yeah. And I really try on social media. I try to, my big thing is I like to encourage and teach compassion.
Right.
I'm not one to spread all the bad things that have happened to dogs in the shelters because that incites the energy of pity. And the energy of pity can never help an animal. It kind of puts the animal in the corner. But if you have the energy of compassion, it helps. It's more encompassing. It's more loving. It's like, how can I serve you? How can I help you? So for me, social media is an avenue of teaching.
Yeah.
Like, here was this dog, you know, that maybe has come from a really horrible past, but the past is irrelevant.
Right.
Because they live in the present and they're here now.
Mm-hmm.
And all we have is we're going to move forward. And now this is the first day of the rest of their life. So that's how I love to get the animals out there on social media so that people can see.
I mean, I would say that when you said that, I was like, yeah, that does sound. Because most of the time, I follow a lot of rescues and a lot of different shelters, Mississippi and in Alabama and different places. And they do have different tactics on how do we get this story out there, right? And so I am very, I'm very compassionate to all of them. So it's even hard for me because it overwhelms me.
Yes.
You get so overwhelmed with the stories.
Yes.
And it, at some point, it kind of makes you, like, I kind of hate humans, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of evil that happens with animal abuse and neglect, and it's horrifying to learn and read about. But at the same time, we don't want to transfer that to the animals in the form of pity, right?
Right.
And that's a big concept. You know, it's kind of tough to, like, stand back and take a deep breath and understand that, okay, that human, that abuser, they're going to get their karma is right. gonna, you know, at some point. So let's put them in a bubble. Mm-hmm. I like to bubble everybody up, by the way. Let's put them in a bubble and hand uh-huh. them over to their higher power. Mm-hmm. And let's focus on this beautiful being that right. has healing to do.
So you hear about, you know, this judge has a countless amount of cases. The likelihood of a dog abuse case being in the forefront is very unlikely. And so that kind of like kills your spirit in sure. that bubble, right? Yeah. Like the dog, for me, then the dog becomes something, you know, like you want to heal them.
Absolutely.
Right. That's like,
so even a step beyond that, uh-huh. what I believe right. is that, animals are super advanced souls.
Yeah.
I believe they're way more advanced than humans are. That's just my humble opinion.
And I completely agree.
And I believe that they're here to teach us lessons, to teach humanity lessons. Mm-hmm. And I also believe very strongly that they sign up for these lifetimes. And they sign up, just like we sign up for abuse, right? I was abused. Uh-huh. I was sexually abused as a child. And
okay.
I have a lot of, you know, hurt things, which is why I turned to animals for love and uh-huh. support as a young child. And at some level, I signed up for that because my soul needed that growth. And I think that the animals, they're so elevated and they're so selfless and they're here to serve. At some level, they're like, yeah, you know what?
Yeah.
I'm going to sign up for this because this person needs a lesson and that mm-hmm. person needs a lesson.
Yeah,
and that person needs a lesson.
It's like, you know how they say, like, you rescued the dog? Like, I'm like, no, the dog, at the
always.
End of the day, the dog is going to rescue you.
Always.
Period.
Always.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I strongly believe, as horrifying as it is, uh-huh. I've come to, people ask me, how do you walk into Miami-Dade and not lose your mind?
Right.
Because they have right now over 1,000 dogs. They do the best they can.
Mm-hmm.
It's a yeah. sad situation. So when I walk in, I really try to set the intention of just projecting. I'm very visual with my, mm-hmm. with what my energy work. And I like literally will sit and pretend that there's this beam of beautiful rose quartz light coming out of my, or emerald green light
right.
coming out of my heart chakra. And I like a headlight, you know, a spotlight. And I just envision walking in and shining that on the entire place. And every dog it hits this beam of light, it's like, and I envision all of their guardian angels surrounding them, that they're safe and protected, even if they're amongst 1,000 dogs who are sick and dying and mm-hmm. fighting. And I just picture each and every one as just completely protected in their bubble of angels. There's that bubble again.
Yeah.
And I let them know collectively, like, I love you. Mm-hmm. You matter. Thank you for being here and teaching us what you came to teach us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's definitely a difficult life and you're doing a great job. And whether I can say that to 1,000, probably not, but I say it enough to say, like, I'm talking to you mm-hmm. with the intention of talking to the collective. And when I look at these dogs, because I feel like they're so elevated, they're like a legion of angelic beings that mm-hmm. are here to serve us and teach us. So I think it's, you know, maybe that's a little wishful thinking, but that's my belief system mm-hmm. and it, at the end of the day, it really helps my
yeah,
heart to understand
exactly.
the earth is a really tough place, as we
right.
all know. It's tough for humans, it's tough for mm-hmm. animals, and I think the best that we can do while we're here is just really try to hold all beings in the highest of light and compassion.
Right.
And just do the very best we can and set the example.
Yeah.
Because it's, boy, we can't make people be nice.
No. No. Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, so that being said, that kind of leads me to the type dog that I take.
Yes.
I've always loved seniors.
Mm-hmm.
They are the ones that are just like, they're wise, they're just amazing. I love that life stage.
Mm-hmm.
And to me, end of life, I think, is very beautiful. As much as I hate seeing them transition, I also think it's a very beautiful rite of passage. And it's kind of like you earned your badge. You've,
right.
you've lived this amazing life of teaching,
mm-hmm.
of serving. And I love to help them during, make it their very special last phase of life. So I will look for specifically the dogs that are very much the most unadoptable. So senior, generally large. Mm-hmm. Noelle's our smallest one. She's 25 pounds because usually the small ones get adopted or go to rescues much quicker. Medical issues, possibly hospice, chronic issues, health, you know, anything health related. And it's very interesting because most of the dogs that we have now, they looked like they were at the end of life when I met them in Miami. They were in such bad shape. And each and every one of them, once we got them down here, and they just got some really good vet care and some good nutrition and love and care, they're like, huh, you know, it just took years off their life. And they're like, oh, we're going to hang around. I mean, they're in great shape.
Yes.
Even our boy, Momo, who he had a huge surgery coming here. Well, he was going to be euthanized, and he had horribly large hernias in his hind end. And even the surgeon here said, are you sure you want to spend this money on... I said, yes, because when I look in his eyes, I know there's a quality of life. And he did amazing. He sailed through the surgery. He healed. He's incredible. Mm-hmm. He's running around. And just last month, we did some blood work, which we hadn't done in a while, and found out he has chronic leukemia. He may have had it coming to us. I don't even know.
Right.
But the point is, he doesn't care he has leukemia. If I didn't get his blood work, we wouldn't know he had leukemia. So... what do? I just took him off the adoption list. I said, this is your forever home. And he's living every single day, just like he was prior to us finding out. And who knows, right? You know, he's still going strong, and we're just going to take every day and make it our best.
Yep.
Yeah, and he was actually we went into the elementary school back in December, and again, we took some of our dogs and we're teaching about kindness and compassion towards animals. The fifth grade classes adopted some of the dogs, and the class that adopted Momo, when they found out that he has leukemia, they wrote all these beautiful handmade get well cards. Yeah, it's amazing. We read every single card to him, and he was engaged, and they gave him toys, and we're going to hang them above his kennel in the sanctuary. They're all sitting on top now. So,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. So that's the type of dog that I take. And if it is their time, like for instance, we had a dog, there was a lot wrong with her. She had metastatic cancer. I didn't know how sick she was until she got down here. She literally walked out of the shelter for the volunteer, and the volunteer, we met halfway. I drove up to pick her up. By the time she got to me, she couldn't stand. She could barely breathe. We had to carry her in. I think she knew she was being rescued, so she got this sudden urge of energy. That like humans do too, right?
Right.
And she, I laid with her all night and just told her all the things. And she passed the next morning, and it was beautiful because for 12 hours she had a home and was loved and was cared for, and she's forever part of Peyton's Promise legacy. Yep.
In speaking with other rescues and volunteers, there's people that drop off their senior dog and turn around and go and get a younger dog, and it's kind of like they're disposable.
Yeah.
And then it's a beautiful, I mean, Peyton's Promise is a miracle for these dogs in a sense that they were discarded, and you kind of
give them another chance.
Yeah, give them another chance.
And it is a very common reason for seniors to go into shelters. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like, well, we can't take care of you anymore. Yeah. You're too much
or
work. You're peeing in the house. You know, the medicines are too expensive. We can't afford the vet care. Mm-hmm. The reasons go on and on. And I always tell the dog, it's like, thank you, right? Uh-huh. Thank you for coming to me.
Right.
Like, you are in a safe place now, and we love you, and we will never complain about any of the above. Like, we are going to honor you and give you the love and respect that you deserve.
Yeah.
And if it's you're going to wear diapers, then you wear diapers, and whatever. We'll clean your kennel out every day. Like, dignity and respect is what we really push and promote. And it's funny, there's a particular monarch that keeps flying around us, and that's a dog that passed her by the name of Tiger. We know that's his little spirit. He always likes to come through when we're doing something special. So he's been flying in, just by the way, if you see him.
I saw him.
That's Tiger. Okay. Yeah, that's our little Tiger. Yeah, he's a little boxer mix, Brindle, that wasn't with us long enough. But it's always divine and perfect timing.
So when you were talking about Peyton's story, and it's been something that recently came to my attention, someone was talking about the rate of euthanasia here in the United States, particularly though in this case in regards to dog pain. What is your opinion on that?
The primary goal of hospice care is comfort.
Mm-hmm.
So I work with an amazing company, sidebar here. It's called Eterna Pure, and they make a pure conjoin sulfate. Okay. Everybody's on it. There's nothing like it on the market. I'm actually one of their partners, and they actually give back 30% of what people purchase under. It's for inflammation. It's for dogs, cats, horses, and humans. So everybody's on it. So that's number one. That's like the foundation supplement they get when they come here. And then we manage from there. Every case is different. But truly, if there is a dog that we just can't get under control, and I have to look at the whole picture.
Yeah.
I always say, let's look at the good days versus the bad days. When the bad days start outweighing the good days in number, we have to really look at quality of life and are they enjoying themselves?
Mm-hmm.
Is it fair to give narcotics and sedate a dog just so they stay alive, but they're not in pain, but they're not enjoying their life? In my opinion, not really.
Right.
That's not a good quality of life. They're not out there smelling the grass and rolling around. So that's when we really look at quality of life, and it's incredibly individualized for each dog. So yes, I think it's kind. I think it's humane. If it comes to a point where they're just not happy.
Mm-hmm.
And also I know that they're not afraid of dying. They don't have the fear like humans
right.
do. Transitioning is very natural to animals. So in all of my years of communicating with them, I've never had a dog that said, you know, oh, I'm afraid. They're just accepting. They're more afraid that the human's freaking out. They're more sad for the human than anything. And they hang on for us. So I feel like it does justice. It's respectful to allow them to be free.
In regards to nutrition,
yes.
How important is nutrition?
Incredibly.
Right?
Foundationally.
Yeah.
So a lot of the diseases and the issues and the skin problems that the dogs have coming out of the shelter can be fixed like that as soon as we change their diet. Everybody's in there eating the equivalent of Burger King because it's cheap.
Right.
It's easy. It's fillers. It's basically dead, diseased, and dying animals.
Yeah, because it's cheaper. It's
exactly.
Like, corn. That's how I see it. It's like, that business is to make the most buck out of you. And
absolutely. And we could do a whole podcast on
exactly.
the dog food industry.
Yeah.
But we get them off of corn, wheat, and soy right away. Mm-hmm. Poultry has been.
Yeah.
So we get them. I try to find a kibble, like a foundational kibble that's that's cost effective, but has a really good sourced. Everybody seems to do really well on fish. So we do mainly fish. And then we'll do like an Honest Kitchen topper and some fresh food. I kind of balance it. So I try to get everybody on of course, if they, require something super special, we'll accommodate.
Mm-hmm.
But as soon as you change the diet, you could probably cut out 30 to 50% of their issues instead of continuing to put medication on top of medication on top of medication. You can start to take them off of some of the things, depending on what it is. So diet is super important.
Yeah. I always tell people, you do the best that you can. Try to get the best kibble you could afford.
Yes.
Always add some fruit and vegetable. Like even whatever scraps if you're eating blueberries, give some blueberries.
I agree with you.
Stuff like that. Just that alone. And I mean, you're a testament to it.
Yeah, and it's funny, you're right, because we are, we're programmed to believe what the commercials say, what the media says, what the dog food companies say, what I won't name any names, but A lot of times I'll get a really surprised look like, wow, you can give them raw vegetables and you can give them fruit. I would have never thought.
I know. No.
It's like, yes, they need just as much nutrient, right, and a variety of, you know, antioxidants, uh-huh, and everything else. Like, you know, they get cancer like we get cancer. Yeah. So we just have to, they get human diseases, right? Mm-hmm. We want to do the same prevention so that there's a lot of misconnection. Like it's interesting how,
yeah, I feel, yeah, like I don't want to say it's a dog fad, right? Because when COVID started, mm-hmm, the shelters were somewhat empty, and then after COVID people are abandoning their dogs because it is somewhat of like your living situation and that. But I also feel on the good side of this that dog owners or dog guardians, I want to say, that take this seriously are really educating on, hey, this is what is wrong. We need to fix this because like us, we're worth it. Like our bodies are temple. Their bodies are, yep, temple. Feed them the best that you can.
That's right. That's right. It's one of the things it's interesting because I have two that are adoptable, and when I first started this, I didn't have any intention on adopting them out because they were hospice, they were sick, they weren't going anywhere. But once we realized that we can rehab some of these dogs, that's one of the very first things I'll ask potential adopters: are you willing to make the financial commitment? Like, mm-hmm, you don't have to get raw, you don't have to get top of the line, but do you understand that vet care, food, mm-hmm, you know, there's a financial commitment to your dog, right, that may live another, in our case, you know, 2 to 5 years, mm-hmm, depending on the life of the dog. But yeah, I think there are a lot of missing pieces of education that I believe should be put out there prior to adopting. Now I get it, because on the flip side, our shelters are overcrowded. And a lot of shelters just want them out. Like,
yeah,
our goal is to let's stay no kill and let's get as many dogs out as possible. And I read more horror stories than I would like for dogs getting out to people that weren't screened and so on and so forth. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think education is huge. That's, mm-hmm, that's the bottom line. And I think that's, we're missing that as a, yeah, country.
Right.
Yeah.
But I mean, and then I go and I say, like, because of a sanctuary like you guys, that you do go out and you, like you were saying with the elementary school,
yes,
you go out and you do educate children, which is the future.
That's,
you know,
what we need.
Yeah,
there was a story, it's a children's story that I saw on the Dodo, and it's called Belly Rubbins for Bubbins. Mm-hmm. And it was a couple that wrote a book on a rescue dog named Bubbins. It was their rescue dog, and it, mm-hmm, was basically teaches shelter, what shelters are like, and animal neglect at an age-appropriate level.
Mm-hmm.
And their purpose was, let's get this into schools so that we can start educating. And I was like, oh my goodness. And the dog Bubbins looked exactly like Bubba's. It was a red. Uh-huh. He looked,
yeah,
kind of like a pup. And we said, let's get this into schools. Let's see if we can get permission. I think this story needs to be shared, and then people will know that we have a sanctuary in town.
Yeah.
And, you know, get our name out too. And it was not only incredibly well received, but eye-opening to learn, because we asked questions in the beginning just to see what the point of view was from the children about rescue animals. And it's alarming to know that they're just learning their parents' point of view, what's,
right,
passed down.
Mm-hmm.
Because somebody did say, you know, the question was, how would a dog get to the shelter? And a little girl did say, when they're old.
Oh my gosh.
So she didn't learn that, you know, she learned that from
a parent,
her,
yeah,
parent. Or so I felt really accomplished by what,
yeah,
we got through, you know, to that we did five, I believe it was, fifth grade classes. That was right before Christmas. And then we just went in this past week for literacy week and read books, not that book, but,
mm-hmm,
read with the kids. And these were younger, third and fourth grade, and they're so receptive to it. And I think, again, the book and our lessons were compassion and kindness. We taught about, mm-hmm, sanctuaries and rescues, but it was more the theme of compassion and kindness, and they get it. They can relate.
Right.
I mean, because I know at that age,
yeah,
that was my best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And that's who I could relate to. And just to see the connections that the kids have with the dogs and the dogs have with the kids, it's just amazing.
Yeah.
So I think if we can continue to do that.
Yeah, no, that's.
In the future.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I mean, children are quite a difficult, like some children don't know how to approach a dog. And so then that becomes an issue when they approach a dog the wrong way. And a lot of people always are like, well, it's the dog's fault. I'm much more of like, well, why did the dog get triggered? Like, you gotta like work back as opposed to like, just this is the fault and that's it.
That's right.
I mean, I love that.
That's how Tommy was adopted out. It's kind of a long story, but he was also a Miami-Dade dog. And then he was set up. I take full responsibility. I don't think I set the pet parents up for success like I should have. Mm-hmm. And they made some pretty big mistakes with taking him out in public, and he bit somebody. So he was returned to me immediately. And he's not a bad dog. Mm-hmm. He just has triggers.
Right.
And it was just a matter of going too fast, too soon, not doing the 3-3. And again, that was a big, huge, giant lesson for me in education and how important it is. And it's like, okay, never again. We're going to do some big time education before I'm going to adopt anybody out. So, and he's been doing great. Like I said, it's been a year. We've learned so much about him, what his trigger points are. And then now we know just like what kind of human is going to be best for him and somebody who's going to go slow and understand. But it's not, I'm going to say 98 to 99% never the dog's fault.
Yeah.
Because they've given us 50 plus signals that they're uncomfortable.
Yep.
We just don't know.
Yeah.
We don't know them because we don't speak the language.
Exactly. So how could the audience help you, and how could they get in touch with you?
I would love for people to like us on social media. So I have a website, a Facebook page. I'm on Instagram, and we're on TikTok. Mm-hmm. And PeytonsPromiseSanctuary.org is the website. Peyton's Promise Sanctuary is also the Facebook and the Instagram handle and TikTok, actually. And I would just love for people to either donate or go to our, we have a wish list on Amazon and Chewy. The links are on the website and on social media. We would just love the help of donations. Because we have special needs dogs, our vet bills are kind of outrageous. Yes, we get discounts. Yes, our vets are amazing, and they help us out where they can with donations of medications, etc. But our vet bills are a lot higher than the average rescue organization, the medical needs, all the reasons why they get sent to the shelter in the first place. And like I said, they're on a very specific diet with treats and so on and so forth, and toys very specific, so that's why we created a wish list. Mm-hmm. And please share us, get the word out there. We're a small organization that's not funded, by any government grants or grants in general. So even if you can't donate, just share, share, tag us, share, help us spread the word. We try to put campaigns out. I think we're gonna try to do a Valentine's Day. We're working on sponsoring a dog. But again, we're like a small and mighty team of three.
No, I
three
understand.
Humans, three humans.
Yeah, three.
right now, we have seven dogs, seven sanctuary dogs, one in foster. And that's pretty much our capacity right now. I wish I could take a lot more. I would take a lot more as soon as we get the more stable enough to get to a larger space. We are definitely going to move on to that. But right now, they keep me really busy. It's a 7-day a week, beautiful job, and I wouldn't change it for the world. And I just love what I do. So just sharing, and reach out if you have any questions. I would be happy to answer anything.
We hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to know more about our guests, read the show notes down below. And of course, join us next Wednesday for another possum episode of You, Me, and the Dogs. Bye.